From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch, health, nutrition, fitness, and lifestyle. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Tim Henney.
We welcome Dr. Stephen Gundry back to the show. Dr. Gundry has written The Longevity Paradox. Dr. Gundry reveals in his book that the gut bacteria that make up our microbiome largely determines our health over the years, and says that an individual's gut bacteria can be a predictor of many health outcomes, even more so than genetics. Gundry also outlines the connection between gut health and the brain and how neuroinflammation is responsible for cognitive decline and degenerative conditions. Wow, that was a mouthful. Dr. Stephen Gundry, welcome back to The Mountain Life. Great to have you.
Well, thanks for having me. Love it up there.
Great. So the microbiome, tell me what I'm missing with this statement, that the microbiome is kind of synonymous with everything that's going on in your gut. Maybe just expand on that.
Yeah, the microbiome is the collection of bacteria, funguses, viruses, worms, protozoa, that actually make up about 5 pounds of us. And there are 100 trillion different bugs that live in us. In fact, 90% of all the cells that make up a human being are actually the microbiome rather than human cells. And shockingly, 99% of all the genetic material, genes that make you and me human, are actually non-human genes. So we're beginning to realize that the microbiome is probably the most important factor in what makes us us and actually makes us healthy.
So these non-human genes, in part, we do inherit those from our parents. Is that right? I mean, I know that I know about the breast milk, for example. The microbiome exists in our mother's breast milk, and she passes that on to us. But how much are we connected to what our parents' gut health or lack thereof, how it exists?
That's a great question. We actually inherit our normal microbiome from our mother when we exit the birth canal. And as I told Maria Shriver, mom took a crap on us. And we actually get our microbiome from our mother. But we also, you're right, get our microbiome from our mother's breast milk. And interestingly, mother's breast milk has about 5% of the calories are sugar molecules that we can't digest, but the microbiome needs to get a leg up. And what's really fascinating is most people, you know, when a doctor takes a family history, you know, did mom have cancer? Did dad have diabetes? Did dad have heart disease? It turns out that family history merely tells us that if we ate like our parents did and they got something, then the odds are that we'll get it not because of genetics from our parents, but because we got a microbiome from our parents and we learned to eat from our parents. And that's actually exciting news. For instance, twin studies, people who are genetically identical, who are separated at birth and adopted by different families, their life course actually parallels their adapted families, not their own genetic twin. And so you are what you eat in so many ways, but it's what the microbiome becomes that really determines our fate.
And Dr. Gundry, what I hear could be a very simplistic version of you either have a healthy microbiome or you have a less healthy microbiome. And if you have a less healthy microbiome, you are predisposed to all sorts of problems and health issues. But I think it's a little more complex in that there's a microbiome that has good bugs, you've called them bugs, and has has less positive bugs, so maybe bad bugs, good bugs and bad bugs, and there's this constant battle being waged, and there are things that we can do to support the good bugs in their battle against the bad bugs, but maybe that's too simplistic.
No, it's actually not simplistic at all. Let me give you an example. There's a very fascinating study. There are what are called obesogenic bugs that actually extract more calories from the food you eat and pass it on to you. And then there are skinny bugs that actually keep those calories for themselves and don't give you those calories, which is, believe it or not, a good thing. So you can take stools from obese individuals and put them in skinny mice, and those skinny mice will become obese just because the bugs were different. Conversely, you can actually take stools from skinny individuals and put them into fat mice, and the mice will become skinny. Now, what's really important that we're beginning to learn is what these bugs like to eat. The good guys, what I call gut buddies, love complex carbohydrates, things like what are called resistant starches, things like yams and tubers and jicama, vegetables like radicchio and chicory and Belgian endive, and those sorts of foods. The bad guys actually crave and utilize simple sugars and saturated fats. And what's really disappointing and exciting simultaneously is they actually send text messages to your brain. They actually hijack your brain to get them more of what they want. Most people remember the show Little Shop of Horrors about the blood-sucking plant, Audrey. And Audrey was always screaming, "Feed me, Seymour, feed me." Well, we can actually measure now these text messages, and they actually do occur. So when you start eating the standard American diet, which is simple sugars and saturated fat, you actually propagate more of the bugs that ask for more of this. And what's shocking with my patients is I can take a meat and potatoes guy and start giving him good bug food, lots of salads, lots of green leafy vegetables, lots of olive oil. And within 2 weeks, he'll come back to my office and say, "This is crazy. You know, I am craving salad. Something has taken me over." It's actually true.
Well, I have to say, when you said you can be really excited and really disappointed at the same time about some of these findings, the last time we talked to you, you were advocating against lectins. I don't know if you can advocate against something, but you were very you had
I don't
a very
like them.
You had a very strong narrative about your dislike for lectins, and one of my favorite foods at the time was cashews. So I haven't had a cashew. Well, that's a misstatement. I've had one or two cashews in the last 9 months or a year. I'm not sure. It was about a year ago that we talked to you. And I started eating macadamia nuts, Dr. Gundry.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They're like little balls of butter coated in salt, those macadamia nuts. And I have since given those up because I found I was getting a bit of a belly, which I attributed to my replacement of cashews with macadamia nuts. So I can be both excited and disappointed. Excited to find a little butter ball coated in sugar or in salt, and very disappointed that I had to give up cashews. But it's kind of interesting how these foods that we think are healthy, good foods aren't always as healthy and good as we think. Because you just went through your list of vegetables and called out ones that aren't really on my list of vegetables. And I just think green leafy vegetables are good for me.
Well, most green leafy vegetables are very good for you. But interestingly enough, there's this family of vegetables, the chicory family, and I named off several of them. And I go around the world studying cultures that have great longevity. And one of the fascinating things about the Mediterranean diet is almost everywhere I go in the Mediterranean, every salad contains some form of chicory, whether it's Belgian endive, whether it's chicory, whether it's frisée, whether it's radicchio, that kind of Italian red lettuce-looking thing. And this, the compounds, the sugars in these vegetables are known to feed a particular bug in us. It's got a hilarious name, Akkermansia mucinophilia. And as I write about in the Longevity Paradox, it may be the key to longevity. And people who live super long lives have an abundance of this crazy bacteria. Your listeners may be interested to know that the famous diabetic drug metformin actually works by increasing the amount of Acromantia mucinophilia in your gut, not by some magical, mystical way of preventing diabetes. In fact, there's a new study just published today about giving people Acromantia mucinophilia, and lo and behold, their cholesterol drops, their diabetes gets much better, and they lose weight. But you don't have to do any of that. If you eat these particular vegetables, you'll grow your Acromantia mucinophilia all by yourself and have a great salad at the same time.
If you're just joining us, our guest is Dr. Stephen Gundry. He's written a new book called The Longevity Paradox, How to Die Young at a Ripe Old Age. And Dr. Gundry, you implicate an out-of-balance microbiome in the prediction of some big things like pancreatic cancer and Alzheimer's. And it seems to me that it's much more complicated than just eating some chicory and kind of cleaning up our diets. Can you talk about that, both those indicators, and then how to really change your microbiome on such a fundamental level?
Well, if you had asked me even 10 years ago if I thought that all diseases began with leaky gut, I probably would have laughed you out of the room. But Hippocrates said this 2,500 years ago, that all disease begins in the gut. And the more research that's done, the more I believe that that's true. For instance, pancreatic cancer. We know that there is a specific set of bacteria that are common in all patients with pancreatic cancer. In fact, you can look at the oral bacteria of pancreatic cancer patients, and they have a specific bacterial population that correlates with developing pancreatic cancer. And researchers in humans have shown that if you eradicate those bacteria, that chemotherapy is going to have a much stronger effect than if you don't eradicate those bacteria. So the same way with Alzheimer's, we now have found in Alzheimer's patients and in the coronary arteries of patients, specific oral bacteria that have migrated to the brain and into the coronary arteries that start the inflammatory process that produces both of these diseases. And they're specific oral bacteria. And so not only do we have leaky gut, but Dr. Dale Bredesen, who wrote The End of Alzheimer's, and I believe that we have a leaky mouth that is the cause of much of the diseases that we associate with aging, like dementia, cancer, and coronary artery disease. And there are specific things we can do to prevent leaky gut or leaky mouth. And actually, one of those is getting rid of the major lectin-containing food groups, which are whole grains, beans, the nightshade family, like tomatoes and peppers, unfortunately, and are your favorite friends, cashews and peanuts.
Well, I have very mixed feelings about all that. And I've been on the edge of my seat waiting to see what of my favorite foods you are going to eliminate from my diet. But that's a whole different conversation. And I am curious because I hear you saying that there's very specific data and we have strong evidence to not only suggest, but probably to, you know, allow us to move forward in a way that could eliminate certain bacteria, promote certain bacteria. And my question becomes, why aren't we doing this, or are we?
Well, unfortunately, sickness is good for business. So there's absolutely no motivation by anyone in authority or who gives out messages that we should do something about this. But let me give you an example. You can look at the microbiome of healthy 105-year-old people around the world. And not only are their microbiomes diverse, that means there's lots of different bugs, But they're identical to each other, and they're actually identical to healthy 30-year-old people. As opposed to people who are aging and not doing well, they actually have a very non-diverse microbiome. They have mostly bad bugs. And one last fascinating thing that I love to talk about is there's a rat called the naked mole rat, and I urge your listeners to Google it. It's probably one of the ugliest animals you'll ever meet. Rats live about 2 years. This rat lives 20 to 30 times longer. In fact, there's no known expiration date on a naked mole rat. And the naked mole rat actually has the same diverse, identical microbiome of these 105-year-old people. And the naked mole rat is the only rat that lives on tubers and roots and mushrooms. So there's beautiful studies out of Singapore that shows if you eat 2 cups of mushrooms a week, and raw or cooked 2 cups of mushrooms isn't very many mushrooms, you have a 90% reduction of Alzheimer's compared to people who don't eat 2 cups of mushrooms a week. And wow, I mean, if that's all you got to do, why wouldn't you?
Well, that's a good point. And I do happen to love mushrooms, so I think you've just turned me on to a different favorite food. I'm going to be stockpiling mushrooms now. You did mention the benefits of flossing and having a non-leaky mouth, and Lynn is a huge fan of flossing. So I'm curious as to how she is going to up her flossing game from the high level that she already is exhibiting in that realm. Lynn? That's not a question for Dr. Gundry.
Well, it's interesting. About 10 years ago, I published a paper of flossing and inflammation. And I hate to floss. My wife is a great flosser. She flosses twice a day. She's a wonderful nut. I found that if I could bring myself to floss every other day, I could do a study. So I convinced 300 of my patients to floss every other day. And I looked at their marker of inflammation called C-reactive protein, CRP. And lo and behold, those people who floss at least every other day lowered their CRP dramatically. And the more you floss, the lower your CRP went. And CRP is a very good, strong marker for developing heart disease. So why not floss? Just floss every other day. It'll be all right.
Every other day? Oh, no. I'll find a lot of free time on my hands now.
Well, believe it or not, people who floss more than that did even better.
Okay, good. Well, the book is The Longevity Paradox, How to Die Young at a Ripe Old Age. Our guest is Dr. Stephen Gundry. Unfortunately, we have to let you go, but maybe we'll continue this conversation when we see you in Park City sometime soon.
Very good. I'll hike on over there this summer and pop in.
Okay, sounds great. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life. If you missed part of the show or want to share it, all our shows are posted within the hour on kpcw.org under the Shows tab. We also podcast all of KPCW's Public Affair Hour shows. Wherever you find your podcasts, you can find them under KPCW and the individual show name. So look for KPCW The Mountain Life and take us with you on your next road trip or commute.